and it sounds simple, it's really not, is listening. You need to be an active listener. Are your clients, and they're probably smart people with limited amount of time that are taking time out of their day. Most of these people you're going to be talking to, meaning the client, tell themselves, they assume that if you're on the phone, you have the knowledge or expertise to address their issue or opportunity. So make sure you know. But if you don't know, never make a statement if you're not sure that it's accurate. It is okay to say, I'm going to do a little more research on that.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of College Works, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you're thinking about being an attorney, we've got a good show for you. We got John Bruckner, who's a different type of an attorney. He's an estate attorney with an entrepreneurial niche. He's going to talk about how we build structure, communication, and protection for business. He's going to get into beyond the law you know and into some of the 1,000 legal careers you probably don't know about, how to set yourself apart in your law specialty, skills you need to be a great estate attorney, and a different look at freedom through becoming one with your career. Welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Well, John, I really appreciate you taking time from shooting birds and golfing and whatever else you lawyers do that you're billing me for to come on the show today and share your wisdom with the audience of the Edge of Excellence.
Thank you for the opportunity, Matt. Happy to be here.
All right, John. We're going to have you on today, which you already know. We're going to talk law. And we're going to go well beyond the courtroom. And we're going to go well beyond corporate law because everybody already knows about that. John is an estate attorney, which you may have heard of before, but John is a different type of estate attorney. So if you're into entrepreneurship, you're into business, that's what John brought into being an estate attorney. He's got a special niche where he focuses on entrepreneurship, protecting entrepreneurial enterprises. He facilitates the development of strategies to retain talent, mitigate risk, and achieve long-term sustainable growth. He lives in Omaha, Nebraska, which is a beautiful place, with his wife and their daughter and a couple dogs. And he, as I mentioned before, loves golf and loves hunting. If you want to find John, you can find him at the McFarland Group. And shout out to Byron McFarland, who introduced me to John. The McFarland Group's great for business. I know most of my friends are clients of the McFarland Group, but also a great place to work if you are looking for something unique in the law field. John, before we go way back, and before we get deep into the law and how to find specialties that match your and all the entrepreneurial and business niches in law, I need to get your definition of excellence. What is your definition of excellence, John?
My definition of excellence, it's a great question. It comes really from a myriad of things. There's the people that you look up to. For me, first and foremost, it usually starts with parents. I think a mentor is very important to have or to seek out in your careers. And then it comes from school and some of the more measurable things that will contribute to excellence overall. But to me, it's always about, it's perpetual. It's always striving for something, setting goals and trying to exceed them, but then continuing to challenge yourself as you hit those goals. I don't think excellence is ever maybe achieved until maybe the end of your career. But if it's something you're continuing to chase, you'll certainly have some success.
And, you know, they say 10,000 hours to become an expert at anything. Is an expert an excellent expert? I don't know. So there's this long-term element to it, this perpetual striving, and then you bring in the societal view and using mentors. And I don't know if I've heard that. You can look, if you want a definition of excellence, look around you and see what excellent is around you. And then you have to use that Aristotle quote, you are the sum of your 5 closest friends. If you're hanging out with people that aren't really striving, you might have to broaden the bubble and look for other mentors that show you what excellence is. Well, we're going to get into law and we're going to get into your prestigious placement and how you build a client base and all that stuff. But before we do, we got to figure out how you got into law. So we're going to go back to high school. How were you in high school? What was going on? What was life like? How'd you see yourself? How'd you find your path?
Yeah. So going back to high school, I was an okay student. I was an athlete. I played sports. Sports really helped develop my competitive drive, which I think is very important to any career, whether it's career in law or career in business or career in medicine. Being competitive to me is very important to striving towards that excellence. Like I said, I was an okay student. I learned how to work systems. I learned at about my 16, 17 that these grades actually really matter if you want to be successful and get to that next level. So probably the second half of high school, I focused a little more. And I think that's a great point. It's who you were around. So my friends were all doing the same, but we all wanted to go to good schools. We were lucky enough to have people in our lives that we could look up to that were successful. And as we got towards the end of that high school, we knew that for me, a four-year college was the right way to go and get the best college you could to be able to pursue a career. At that young age, I didn't know I'd be into law, but it was certainly a possibility. I have other lawyers in my family, so that was something I looked up to as well. However, I ended up in a much different area of law than the litigators in my family. So,
and that's the issue. And I was recording some podcasts yesterday that are solos where it's just me blabbing, and the schools just don't service the students. They don't give them exposure to what's out there. Oh, I want to be a lawyer. Okay, take pre-law, take history. But there's never someone that says, hey, stop for a second. Let's talk about the 150 different practices of law and the 450 different careers in law and the 450 variances on all those careers or whatever the numbers are. No one sits them down and talks about that. So they're all mainstreaming in one direction and they got to kind of figure it out. Now, in one of my podcasts about how to find a job, I talk about wormholing where you just get lost in the internet and you just dive into careers in law and types of law and awkward law practices or just getting lost in the internet to figure things out. And that's what we're going to talk to John about. So you're in high school and sports gives you this competitive drive. You've got, you know, you're kind of flaking out, but your peer pressure was a positive peer pressure, which is interesting. I take hundreds of people to Mexico and my friends say, wait a second, you're taking like 200 college students down to Mexico. So yeah, that's what I do for a living. I take college students down to Mexico. They say, how do you do that? I said, it's the weirdest thing. We have like this positive peer pressure where if someone gets out of hand, someone else grabs them and takes them home. It's like a protective peer pressure. And it's the same at that same business. Our quality is based on people wanting to do the right thing and making sure the people around them want to do the right thing. So you worked on that in high school and that got you into college. And I know you went to Creighton Law School where our original CFO and my original partner, Tracy's son, went. So Creighton's near and dear to my heart. You went there for law school. Where'd you go to undergrad?
I went to St. Joseph's University out in Philadelphia and studied finance there. I knew I wanted to go into business at the time. And I selected I was between entrepreneurship and finance. And truly based on advice of one of my mentors was, well, finance is a better major for you long term. So that's what I chose to study in undergrad and graduated the degree in 4 years later.
All right. So, and that's another great point. If you're listening to this right now and you're driving down the road right at the speed limit, focused, not distracted. I'm talking to a lawyer right now. You're not taking any notes down. You're mostly thinking about the road and you're thinking, I got to figure out what I need to do for the rest of my life. That's not how it works. Almost everybody starts with one path and then goes to another and another and another. And they say you're going to change your career six times. Now, John hasn't changed his career six times, but he changed his career path in a major direction. So he did some things to make sure he was ready for whatever happens. He got the finance degree. He's going to go into business and then decides he's going to go into law. And maybe one day he'll decide he's going to be an astronaut. We don't know. But the finance and the math will help with being an astronaut, too. the communication skills, the legal mindset will help with being an astronaut too. So you're keeping your options open. You're taking these business classes. You're there in Philly. Is that where you're from?
No, I'm here from Omaha, but I ended up out east for school.
You must have hated cheesesteak. You're from Omaha, the place of a great steak. And by the way, did you know that Alan Simon, who used to be the CEO of Omaha Steaks, was on our advisory board for like 5 years?
I did not know that. I know the Simon family, and actually recently they've divested some of that, some of Omaha Steaks into McCarthy Capital, which is the private equity firm here in Omaha.
Yeah. He used to come to our office, you know, once every quarter, and he'd sit there and give us advice. He'd always say, "Hey, this isn't a cracker stand anymore, Matt. You've got to get some stuff in place." And when we had a really horrible thing happen in our business, I'm not going to get into because it makes me really sad. And I didn't know who to call. I called Alan Simon, and he loaned me their entire HR department to solve my problem. Just boom, done. What a wonderful man he was. He actually lived down the street from me. Shout out to the Simon family. Shout out to Omaha Steaks. And did you know that Lincoln, Nebraska, the school that the Simon family just funded and sponsored, and that wonderful school that you probably are associated with, is a school that doesn't like my company? The number one rated internship in every good category by every good agency in the whole country. And we're not welcome with open arms at that school. So when we're done with this podcast, we're going to have you sue that school.
Yeah, we need Husker Nation to step up. Yeah, we need that. We need support NSG.
We need them to step up. Well, just college ricks, just college ricks. So you leave the capital of meat. You go to the cheesesteak capital, which I love cheesesteaks, but it's just bad meat mixed with cheese to make it taste better. And then you come back to Creighton, which is in Kansas, right? Or is it? Oh, it's in Oklahoma too, isn't it?
Omaha, yep.
Oh, it's in Omaha too. So you come back to Creighton, you go to law school, and then something weird happens because law school isn't what people think it is. You're not in there being trained on all the different aspects of law. Tell us just a little bit about what law school is really like, and how do you pull out what you're going to try, what type of law you're going to practice by going through law school?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I may have had a little bit of a unique perspective on this. So law school, you know, it's not quite as intimidating as it is in the movies, but there is some of that, especially in the first semester of trial by fire, if you will, by getting called on by your professor and making sure you better be read up and the Socratic method and all those things you see on TV. But really, it's like any other school. If you focus, you read, you go to class, you should do all right.
But they're diving into what are they spending the time on? They're not training you to be a lawyer.
Right.
They're training you on law, right?
On writing, on even structure of how to write briefs, how to write a complaint, you know, and then all the core classes are that first year. So everyone in the first year takes the same classes. And at Creighton, for instance, you're separated into two categories, A and B, and you go through those core courses in your first year all together. But again, it's just focused on case law and structure of how to write and respond and write up a summary, essentially, to understand the law and then apply the rules of law to that. And what I found so interesting after my first year is, you know, here's all of us spending $50,000 a year to get this education. At the time, the stats were somewhere in the neighborhood of 40,000 new lawyers graduating every year from all the law schools across the country. And there's roughly 30,000 jobs for those individuals. And those are the traditional law firm jobs. So I, being a finance guy, started doing some math and I said, well, wow, okay, so 50 grand a year. There's 40,000 of us coming out. There's 30,000 jobs. By the way, the median salary for those jobs was $57,000. From a business perspective, this doesn't make as much sense as maybe I thought. And I knew I wanted to use the education, I think at that point, as really what it is, an education, a way to think critically. And I luckily met Byron McFarland after that first summer. And that's where my unique path began.
I met you when you were right out of law school then.
In law school.
Oh.
Yeah, the first time one of the first client interactions I had and was able to run was your case with Byron.
Wow.
and then running all the follow through.
How long ago was that? It's been like 20 years.
Yeah, that was 2011 or so.
Okay. And by the way, I still haven't transferred my life insurance into my trust. I don't know how many bets you've won on that.
I've been collecting money on that bet for years now.
Every single year. Okay. So what I'm looking at here is, and this applies to whether you're a lawyer, a finance major, whether you go to Harvard or you go to a different school, know your numbers. How many people are shooting for the same jobs? And there's two things you can do about it. You can better yourself and you can increase the number of jobs. So you're looking at it going, there's 40,000 people, 30,000 jobs. I'm going to do my best and do as much as I can, but that I'm going to set myself apart, right? So you start working to set yourself apart. You got your finance major, and we'll talk about what else. And then you meet this guy, Byron, but you're in the mindset. So success comes when opportunity meets preparation. You're preparing, and part of the preparation is your mindset that, wait a second, this isn't as easy as I thought. If you're in college right now, it's not as easy as you thought. There's a lot of people that want your job. If you're changing jobs right now, there's a lot of people that want your job. So know your numbers first. Second, set yourself apart. And then third, what I like the most is, what are you going to do that's different? So you have the finance that's different. Other people have political science and history or pre-law. You've got this business angle, this finance angle. And then you meet Byron, where there's your opportunity. But you had the finance major, or you'd done the other things, or you knew the number, you had the mindset. So anybody listening right now, you got to know your numbers. You got to set yourself apart. You got to do something different. And then you probably have to look at different angles. You can multiply the job opportunities by three if you're thinking outside the box. So Byron runs into you, and you're already in this mindset. And what clicked to make you think, wait a second, this is that outside of the box, perfect fit for me because I'm a math guy, I'm a finance guy, I'm a business guy or woman. If you're a woman, you're not, but other people listening, what made it click? How'd you know this was it?
Yeah, it's another great question. So I at that time, that summer, I interviewed with a couple other financial shops here in Omaha. And most of them were telling me, hey, you know, we love that you're in law school. Call us in 2 years, or you could quit law school and come work for us now. Neither of which seemed to meet my expectations. So I was kind of still moving down the road, met with Byron. And I met with Byron, and Byron was very much encouraging me to continue to pursue this education. Thought that was a perfect fit. Timing was perfect because he had transitioned from a more traditional financial services and insurance business to this consulting model working for the business owners we now still serve. And so there was some timing there that was perfect. And then I met Byron. Byron is my mentor. He's a very dynamic businessman who sees things from a unique angle and probably even more so has a very unique skill in interpreting that information and communicating it very effectively to our clientele. And so just that interaction, the combination of knowing who his clientele was at the time and who he was servicing, and just his approach to the marketplace really clicked with me, where I said, yep, this is for me. I'm going to continue down law school because that was something he very much encouraged to do. And I worked whatever between part-time and full-time was all the way those next 2 years and maintained going to school. And I had a job waiting for me at the end of it.
Okay. So first of all, you're back to that definition of excellence. You were always looking for these mentors, or when you found Byron, you realized, oh shit, this mentor thing's cool.
I think I was always looking for him. I was lucky enough to be, I have great family, and I was through that family, not just family members, but people in my family's network that I looked up to, that had looked out for me. I had a landscaping business in high school. And my clients were basically my parents' friends. But through that, I learned a lot. Was, hey, you know, you get your product, you do a good job, you put it into their yard. So there was mentors that I had kind of collected through those types of relationships. But this was my first very formal mentor relationship, I would say. This was the one that was like, okay, this is what you're going to pursue.
So yeah, it's a group. A mentorship can be this one mentor if you're lucky and you've got those parents, or you're lucky and you've got a friend's parents, or you're lucky and you have a professor, or you're lucky and you have a boss. And there's a lot of luck to go out there and find. So you can find the luck, but you have kind of a group of them, maybe. And you had your parents and your friends' parents and some people at school. And you even talk about your friends as maybe being in a mentor role at certain times. And so you're open to this. So if you know your numbers, you're setting yourself apart. You're looking for mentorship and growth, not just in school. And then you also talked about you have this goal. You're going to be a lawyer. And in your mind, you probably pictured yourself, Law and Order. You pictured yourself as one of those Law and Order people, and you're arguing the cases and the judge is thumping and, you know, you're going to meet with the criminals. You know, that's what people think. So you have this goal. I'm going to be one of those people. So your goal is flexible. And we have a whole goal setting podcast. The goals need to be flexible. The goals need to be adaptable, but you still need to be focused on your goal. So you had people trying to drag you out of your goal. No, why don't you just come do this finance thing, skip the law school thing? Or, hey, wait a second. Don't set yourself apart. Don't do something different. Just wait like all the lemmings in the law school till the end. Then we'll interview you. So you're flexible with your goal, but you're focused on your goal. You still want to be a lawyer. You just have a different view of what a lawyer is now. And probably it ended up being much better for you, right? If you look at where you are in law, and I guess I've known you since you started. I mean, and I've introduced you to a lot of my friends, and there's some of them are pretty heavy hitters. And I wonder how many clients of the McFarland Group have been on my podcast. So you're dealing with like strong opinions, strong personalities. You got to push back, which a trial lawyer has to do. But most lawyers have to get deep into the nitty gritty details. So you've got this finance background. And what John and I do is we sit and talk on the phone about what if scenarios. What if this goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? Should we insure against this? Should we self-fund this? What's the cash flow of the business to be able to self-fund? What happens when that gets taxed? What happens? And so there's all this financial element. And then there's this communication, interpersonal element. Some of it's like, you know, what if one of your partners wants to leave? What if something happens? What if they're disabled? What if you have an issue with substance abuse or who knows what? So when you're in business, a lot of people don't plan for the worst because entrepreneurial optimism, I coined a term, by the way, I copywrote it and spent, I think, $15,000. Holding the copyright for like 8 years before I realized how stupid this is. Entrepreneurial optimism was one of my terms. I had four of them, by the way. Entrepreneurs have this. And the reason why I did it, by the way, I like to do side notes. I did it because I was afraid that some of the speakers I saw would steal all my terms and make them their own. Like, what's going on with my ego right here when I do that? Speaking of your five closest friends, why am I hanging out with them if I think they're going to steal my stuff? But these entrepreneurs have this optimism that really fuels them. We're going to make a phone with no buttons. We're going to launch privately into space. We're going to have cars out of electricity that we never changed for 20 years and people still buy them. And you have this optimism that really makes entrepreneurship work, but it makes it not work when things go wrong. And so John is the finance person, that's the communications person, and the strong person that can punch back and punch in the face if he needs to, and gets people to think about things that maybe they don't want to think about, but thank God they did, right? So he becomes a mentor, maybe to some of the people that were his mentors, and that's kind of a unique place in the law.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like disc assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence Bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
So, what do you say to someone that's, you know, 21, a junior in college wants to go to law school, or they're in law school, or they just got out and maybe they're just not in the right position. How do people find these little specialties that apply to who they are when they're not just going to do trial law because they're the salesperson type?
First, be open. Go to as many things as you possibly can, whether that's seminars, networking groups, career fairs. Just learn. Go down the wormhole, as Matt suggested. So that's one place to stop. Curiosity. You let your curiosity explore. Second, and it's a bit of a theme, but seek out someone, whether it's the grade ahead of you, someone that's recently graduated, someone that you can find in your network that is in a career that you think you'd like to pursue. I can't tell you how far that has taken me. I was encouraged to do that. And what I learned through that process was, whether it was a business owner like Matt or other professionals that had been much further down the road, almost every single one of them wanted to help when you asked for it. So ask for that help. I think most of them see themselves through you. They're a younger version of themselves through you if you're willing to put yourself out there. So I just encourage you to take as many opportunities as you could to pursue what you're interested in and the people you're interested in. Most of them want to help.
As you're saying that, I was thinking, why is that? Why do I want to help? Like, anybody can call me up and I'll just stop what I'm doing and help them. Why is that? That's so weird. And I think about it a lot because I help my friends' kids. Like, literally, I take my friends' kids and get them into college and then help them get careers. And I do it because my friends do a bunch of stuff for me and I got to pay it forward. And I think that's why, because the people that are in that mentoring role were probably helped by somebody else and they probably want to pay it forward. And I think that might be it. And it sounds so strange because there's narcissists out there. But most people in the world are good people and most people in the world follow karma, whether they buy into it or not. And I think someone helped them, they want to help you. But I will throw the caveat out. If you're just mooching and you're not acting, it gets old. And I always talk about this young woman that came to me. I mentored 5 kids at this college, I mean, this high school, sent them to 5 different entrepreneurs. And they spent a day with each entrepreneur to figure out entrepreneurship. One of the 5 every year checks in with us at Christmas. I'm going to get an email here pretty soon, tells us what's going on with her. And in the summer. And she just checks in, tells us what's going on. And then she says, yeah, I'm looking for a job. Well, wait a second. Go talk to Darren. Remember, you interned with him. He's an engineer. And I'm going out of my way to do what I can for this person because I feel what I did for that one day back in the day. And I set it all up. So maybe I set up the 5 days, was received, utilized, and has gone a long way. She went to a city college, ended up at Berkeley, started a crazy business while she was in Berkeley, just wacky, weird business, went to get funding. I think she's a senior now. I'm about probably to get an email about how I'll probably put her on the damn podcast, how she's funding herself. And I just feel like right now I want to go find where Ariana is and help, help, help. So I think there's 2 pieces to it. They've been helped before. They want to pay it forward. Other people are helping their kids or other people have helped them. And you've got to be acting and giving feedback. Now, you don't have to do what they say, but you have to tell them why you did it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to respect the willingness for someone to help you. You better act on it then. It's just like getting referred to somebody. If someone's going to put their name out there and on your name, you have to respect that and have 100% confidence that you're going to follow through.
So your advice is, you know, you're looking at trying to figure out what to do, and maybe you're focused on this law career, or maybe you're thinking about the law career. Read, explore, talk to people in the position that you want to be in, ask them what other positions they think that you should look into. And since we're on a podcast, what exactly are the skills needed? And I kind of summarized it a little bit, but in your words, skills needed to be, and I get, would you call yourself an estate attorney? Is that what you would be?
I'd honestly call myself a consultant or a business advisor.
A consultant who happens to have a law degree.
Yeah, right.
And you're really a finance consultant that has a law degree. And when we talk on the phone, we have my in-house attorney, Siraj, who's a wonderful person too, there. So you guys are working with each other. He's on my business end doing law stuff. You can speak his language. We get the accountants on there. They're on my business end doing the accounting stuff. You can speak their language. So you're a lawyer that happens to be a consultant. And what skills do you need to be excellent? And yeah, what skills do you need to be excellent? And how do you prepare for this type of law? And what other law would be similar to this?
I think the first skill, and it sounds simple, it's really not, is listening. You need to be an active listener. The clientele you're dealing with, if you're in a professional career anywhere in the law, are your clients. And they're probably smart people with limited amount of time that are taking time out of their day to speak to you about an issue or an opportunity. So listen, and believe me, they know if you're listening or not. They've talked to a lot of people in their careers. So that'd be first. Second would be follow through. Do what you say you're going to do. Next would be expertise. Most of these people you're going to be talking to, meaning the clientele themselves, they assume that if you're on the phone, you have the knowledge or expertise to address their issue or opportunity. So make sure you know. But if you don't know, never assume, never make a statement if you're not sure that it's accurate. It is okay to say, I'm going to do a little more research on that and follow through that way and get them the right answer rather than feel embarrassed in the moment that you don't have the answer readily available. So that's a skill of discernment, really, and knowing when to speak and when to go back to the drawing board. Perseverance would probably be the next one. Know that it's not going to happen overnight. Know that it's going to take a few at-bats. You're going to get bruised on a couple of those at-bats. But as long as you continue to persevere, you're going to develop that expertise to ultimately go where you want to go.
Okay, so we need to dive into how to develop some of these. So you got listening. You didn't mention reading people, but you're good at that. Listening, reading people, follow through. Expertise, which that one we're going to talk about for a second, perseverance. So listening skills, reading people, how do you develop those? You're in your 20s. How do you work on those?
You got to get at bats, but you can even do it in your everyday life. I mean, I don't know anybody that's in an intimate relationship that hasn't at least been complained to once or twice about not listening very well. So you can even practice that way. I'd encourage anyone.
30% of people under their 30s are virgins. Did you know that? They're not in relationships anymore. They're not getting those at-bats. They'd rather sit at home and not go try. It's the
something I haven't thought about. But that's the
craziest stat ever. What's going to happen to population in 15 years? Yeah, crazy, crazy stat. Keep that one on the podcast.
Get that one in my back pocket.
So you need at bats. So those at bats may be going out on the dating circuit. It may be in a relationship. It may be going and talking to a professor. I think the easiest way is work. And when you're in high school and when you're in college, you work through law school. You are getting at bats in law school. When you were in college, did you work?
Yes. I worked every summer and I worked on and off in a formal internship role that I worked on and off throughout the year to make money as I could. I try to make enough money to save up for the year, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know how that goes for my son. What were you customer facing in those jobs?
Yes.
Yeah. So I watched my son, you know, normal 14-year-old, couldn't really communicate. He worked behind a counter at a food store for 10 hours a week, 11 hours a week for I don't know how many weeks. And it was night and day because he was getting at bats listening, getting at bats talking, getting at bats reading people. I bust tables. I'll never forget being just lambasted by a couple customers for my inappropriate discussion, for my lack of listening, for my inability to communicate on that adult level. So you get at bats through everyday life. You also get at bats through working. You don't have to go be a lawyer to get at bats. You can mow lawns. You mowed lawns. You can you can wait tables. You can work in internships to get at bats. And then you get into follow through and perseverance. Another two interesting ones. So if you're going to work on your follow through, and I'll just throw out one. it just doesn't exist in my world, non-follow through. I just can't even imagine if someone says they're going to do something, not doing it. And it happens around me, and it's just baffling to me. Like, and we'll sit and talk, can you believe that person didn't do what they said? It just doesn't happen. And perseverance, like, I don't even know what non-perseverance is. And this guy, Sean and I, we work together. We talk about how we just go to work, and then 3 days a week, we forget to eat. Just, you're just going. And when things happen, you just keep going. And someone said to me, hey, you had a lot of stress with something. I said, Hassan, dude, I don't feel stress. I just turn it off, almost to a point of turning it off too far. Where the other day, something happened to my daughter, and I was like, okay, I can't do anything about it. Whoa. I can do something about it. And I sent my wife to England to take care of my daughter because I become too numb. I'm too good at perseverance, right? So how do you develop follow through and perseverance in your 20s? You don't follow through and get fired. That happened to me a bunch of times. That taught me a few lessons.
Yeah, there's those lessons that have scars that will teach you really quick. But I think even the school process and or work, both of those things go a long way. School-wide, there's deadlines. We got to get ready for tests. We have mile marks to hit. So that's one way to do it. That's why one of the big reasons, in my opinion, why you're going to school. And the second is work, just as Matt suggested in the last topic, was go to work, get there, be on time, follow through, do what you say you're going to do. You'll watch, you'll get more and more responsibility through that process. Even in, let's say, a behind-the-counter job, you will get more responsibility if you're there following through, and you'll see it happen. Do the extra thing. I think that's a differentiator. You know, sometimes five extra minutes is the differentiator between you and the next guy. Don't clock out at 4 o'clock if that's your time. Five more minutes of stuff to do.
It's the last 5%. I coach these kids on getting into college, and it's like the day before they're like, okay, you've got one more week to this next deadline. And there's a deadline on November 1st, and then there's another one November 15th, and another one November 30th. The 15th and the 30th, they just stop. Like, wait a second. You've been doing this for 13 years. Don't not do the last 3 hours. So it's that extra, that last 10%, finding something that they haven't told you to do. Pick up the trash when they're not telling you. Stay 5 minutes later. So you get this by organization, you mentioned, time management. That's how you learn to do the follow through, the perseverance, practice. And then we get to expertise. That's a hard one, right? Because it takes 10,000 hours. Do the math. That's 5 years working full time to become an expert. I was thinking about skiing. I consider myself probably the best skier you've ever met. I'm a mountain biker. Well, any of my listeners have ever met. And I'm not an expert. I haven't done 10,000 hours of continuous skiing or mountain biking. I'm close, but I'm not there yet. So it's taken me, and now I'm 52 years old. My whole body's falling apart because of skiing. And will I ever get to be excellent at it? Well, I'm pretty excellent, but am I Olympic excellent? No. And time for me to change sports because my body's not working anymore. I got to start all the way over again. So you came into your legal career as an expert in finance. That's carried you through your whole life.
Perseverance. Or expertise, excuse me, at 10,000 hours.
So you've got the finance expertise you carry through your whole life. You, when I met you, and I remember it, you were kind of behind the scenes.
Correct.
So you weren't an expert at dealing face-to-face with CEOs, and you weren't an expert at leading CEOs. That developed over the last 10,000 hours. Now you are. So you come with some expertises, and then you have to pick other things. How do you prioritize what to become an expert at on your path to legal excellence?
Well, interest for one, and desire. So what do you really want to pursue, and what are you interested in? But then from there, it's what are you good at? I think there's a difference, there's a distinction there.
It's a unique ability, right? It's a unique ability is what you're good at and you want to do.
Yes.
And so you found early, oh, I'm pretty good at talking to this weird Matt dude. I might work on that. Hey, I'm pretty good at what would be two other of your expertises, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say first it's relationship building and the trust that comes with that. Next, I'd say building a team. I think I have an ability to bring people in and motivate them and want them to win. That's the team atmosphere. That's the competitiveness. And lastly, we would just say that the overall skill that I've developed, the expertise of knowing
the finance,
knowing small middle market businesses. Yeah,
all the little ins and outs. So if you look back to your 20s, this is my favorite question. You made some sacrifices. What was a big sacrifice you made that at the time you're like, I can't believe I'm not doing this? And you look back and you're like, thank God I did that.
The great question. Well, there was time. I mean, all the time you were choosing, you know, a Saturday to go into the office over something fun, a football game, a friend's party, what have you. But it pays dividends. And that's the extra hours. To me, that, you know, the 40-hour work week is the minimum. And what you do beyond that is what gets you to a different seat in whatever organization you're working in. I definitely sacrificed even having a family early. I didn't get married until my 30s, my mid-30s, really. So there was just, I had the ability to be a bit selfish and focused on myself at that age. And I think for the most part, I made some mistakes in my 20s, but I made good decisions about when to prioritize work over everything else. And that was an exchange I was willing to make. And one other thing that I learned from being around the business owners we served and Byron and some other guys and gals on the team was, if you're willing to always be on, if you're willing to become your work, you get some time freedom with that because you're always on. And so I thought that was an exchange that was appealing to me because it becomes one. So at this point in my career, which is still fairly early in it, it's one, whether you're in your office or out at a social event, my identity is with the McFarland Group and my role as an advisor here for our clients.
Okay. So that we got to pause on that one. So you're going the contrarian argument. And nowadays we have this identity based on fame and accomplishment instead of identity based on impact and values, which, you know, the Instagram world has changed things. And I hope that comes back and we get to some of the community values, but people are thinking the opposite of what you're thinking. They're thinking 40 hours off. They're thinking separation. I think that way. You know, 6 to 8, when my kids were young, you could never interrupt, but I think you're kind of saying the same thing. You're always on. You may take a call on Christmas Day.
Yes.
There may be some emergency. You may be on vacation. So the opposite of what, you know, this balance that I often talk about, balance of, you know, I need to shut down. I go to places where there is no phone. Like I'm in deep Africa or South America to get away where no one can touch me so I can turn off. You're saying, no. I'm always on, and that gives me more freedom. Because why?
Well, it certainly gives you geographic freedom, if nothing else, because you can be anywhere. But you're not saying that you're on is more of a mindset. It doesn't mean that you're working every instant of every day, but it means that you're willing to. And I think,
but if you want to go to an 11 o'clock rehearsal of your daughter's dance practice, or your wife is asking you to come to lunch with her.
There you go.
Instead of with a business lunch, or you want to go visit your kids, a college sporting event on a Wednesday, you can do that because you're available on a Saturday or a Sunday or whatever. So that's just a different way of looking at it.
You nailed it, Matt. That's exactly how I look at it. That gives you that time freedom to be able to demand it, to demand what you know, doing what you want to do. So you're always making a choice. I think even within that, something I learned early on that's very relevant to the, you know, what did you exchange in order to get there conversation is opportunity cost. Okay, you know, you want to go to the fun thing on a weekend, that's great. That may cost you some of your 10,000 hours to get to where you wanted to go. There's a cost to that. So as long as you're always making decisions that way, you should be treading the right direction. And that's exactly how I look at it, Matt, is because I'm willing to go work on a Sunday, you get some time freedom on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I spent my Halloween on Zoom till midnight with my friend Oscar's son. coaching a kid to get into college. I had my daughter's friend, Emmy, doing a disc test coaching. I don't think of it as work, but it's what I do for work. And I do it on the side because I really like it. You can be always on. Like, I think of myself as someone that helps 20-somethings prosper. And that's kind of my identity. I don't think of my identity as National Services Group or in my businesses, but I think of my identity as that. You're doing a similar thing. You're a person that helps people protect their businesses, oftentimes from themselves. And you become as one. I'll do it in the middle of the night. I'm doing one of those meetings on Christmas with my nephew because it doesn't feel like work. So if you go through the process of working diligently to figure out what you want to try first, if you know the numbers, if you set yourself apart, if you have a goal, but you're flexible, if you learn to listen, read people, follow through, persevere, you'll get these expertises that you actually align with your unique ability. It's not just law. You wouldn't be a good trial lawyer, I don't think. Well, you'd probably be a
pretty
good one. You'd be a good one, but you wouldn't be an excellent one. When you get that special place that you can thrive in and be excellent in, maybe you can just become as one, and that does give you freedom. And we'll end it there because I think that's a great way to end. John, I really appreciate you making time and not billing me for this. In fact, I don't think I ever get bills from you, which I really love. I hope you have a great day and a great holiday. And please tell Byron I said hello.
I will indeed. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, well, you won't get the bill till at least next year.
Okay, perfect.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.